All right. Well, I appreciate all the emails that are coming in tonight, and I'll pass along some of your questions to our guest tonight. We'll find out in a minute where to. I suspect this book is available at all the usual outlets, but we'll get specifics in a moment. But thanks to everybody who has sent in some interesting feedback and some suggestions, as well as including a couple of good rock and roll stories, including one guy who claimed to be a member of the original Santana. And everybody thought he was kidding, and then turns out it was true, and he was reunited with Carlos and his band after 40 years. So how about that? That's a little bit of a feel-good story, I think. It's amazing. I just have to say this, that the moment that you start taking any kind of a poke at this clearly floundering administration, the next thing that you hear or read, in this case, is something about either tea baggers or tax dodgers. Does anybody have a history book handy? Does anybody have any research materials at all? Socialism will work only if you have a high gross domestic product in comparison with a small, controllable population. Otherwise, there are just too many freeloaders, and it overwhelms the financial system. If you don't believe me, you're going to look it up. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right, gentlemen, we have covered a variety of components as far as the future of this country is concerned, and really just the future structure of civilization, and whether it's militarized police, whether it's being a little bit too free in the spending till the whole nation winds up in multiple tens of trillions of dollars in debt, more money than can ever be paid off. But let me ask you this: what about the maybe you heard my comments earlier. It's interesting. It seems to me that there's a psychological component here. And I just responded to an email, and I said, I think it would be equally unjust for me to suggest that the liberal-minded, or those with the liberal bent, are perhaps resentful of other people's success and would like to level the playing field by force of government. How much of a component, how large a component do you think that is in the mentality of the populace? Because clearly, I mean, the nation is divided ideologically,
Sure.
and both sides are equally immovable.
Well, there's multiple factions. I think what you have is a core of people on either sort of side of things, maybe on the order of 30% of the population, maybe a little higher on the left, that are very strongly committed to a particular point of view. It's a fairly substantial group of people in the middle, too, who are open to persuasion. And, if things get extreme enough, people start to, as hard as it is, realize that they've been mistaken about something and they can change their minds. But ordinarily, we do have a pretty, there's a swing vote in the middle in the USA. As far as envy, and that people just sort of are liberals because they envy other people's success, there's a few problems with that. One is that wealthy people in this country tend to be liberal. So it's not as if they're envying other people's success. What I think it is I think they want to use the government to try to help other people, and maybe they don't want to embark on personal, private charity or whatever. What the sort of psychological foundations of these things are isn't fully understandable. The people on the right have, oh, there's some even more of a mixed bag. Why they don't particularly care for large, powerful government, why they tend to be more entrepreneurial, maybe they're just sort of more ornery and individualistic. There are poor people who are very unwilling to, don't want to be dependent on the government. That's just sort of, they want to keep their freedom. So I don't know. It's tough to find a psychological basis for all this stuff, though some of it's rooted in the regional cultures of the country. The Northeast and the Yankees that were there and then moved out to the West tended to be much more paternalistic and believe in a stronger role for government. And you still see that to this day, that New England and the upper Midwest is still marked by that. And whereas the people who are the most freedom-minded tended not to be the wealthiest people, it's the people who are the backcountry and the hill country of the Appalachians and the Highland South. And that's not a wealthy part of the country, but they're the ones who tend to be the most suspicious of big government and big business and big anything. So there are cultural foundations for these things that don't obviously align with political views or with the political parties that we have.
I think it's also a question that both the right and the left are seeing the kind of crony capitalist system that has gotten control over the many of the main levers of the economy. And it is a collusion between government power and people who are using this government power to benefit their own businesses and their own personal ends. And there's all these very clever mechanisms now for making sure that this class spreads the wealth around among itself. What is happening is the people on the right are focusing on the crony part, and the people on the left are focusing on the capitalist part. And to some extent, they're not seeing the full picture, because we have to face the fact that a lot of the large corporations are basically hand-in-hand with the America 2.0 centralist government bureaucratic machine, and that is how they maintain their profitability. The banking sector has a lot of this in particular, of course. Ideally, the America 3.0 movement would be able to draw people from both the right and the left, but the people on the left have got to give up their idea that they can cure crony capitalism by making the government stronger. If you make the government stronger, you only give the crony capitalists more tools to continue enriching and protecting themselves. And on the right, you have to distinguish between being in favor of the free enterprise system and being in favor of individual businessmen, many of whom have, on the large corporate side, have become crony capitalists. A historical analysis could say they've been that way for a long, long time. Certainly some of them have been that way for a long, long time.
Keep rolling.
I have an anecdote about this. Early on, when the Occupy movement just got started, I walked out of my office one night to just sort of see what it was all about. It was maybe a week old in Chicago. And there was a bunch of kids there. To me, they were kids in their 20s. And I was talking to them, and they were fine. They were nice kids, and they got A's and B's their whole life, went to college, borrowed a lot of money, and couldn't get jobs. And they were looking for some kind of solution to this, and they had a lot of very half-baked ideas about what was going on. And then you could see that the people who were sort of taking the leadership of this movement were older, more doctrinaire, leftist types. And it occurred to me that, what I wish is that my friends in the Tea Party and I had spoken up to these people and come over there and talked to them. I thought, these kids are rightfully ours. The problem isn't that, the problems that they're facing is that there's an economy that isn't booming and chugging along and generating jobs for reasons that aren't what they think. It's because a too powerful government that's been captured by special interests is crushing out the life of the economy. And they've been lied to, and they've been badly educated. And, it's going to be the task of people like us to try to find ways to reach this millennial generation and show them a more accurate picture of the history of this country and the current crisis and where we're going, and win them over to our side. We need to have a populism on the left where people who really even still have kind of lefty ideas but want to help people and use the government to do it will understand, like you said earlier, that you need a thriving private economy to pay for it, and that the big, powerful government they built isn't their friend. It isn't what they should be backing. It isn't what they should be making even more powerful. Whether the people will wake up, sooner or later, hopefully sooner.
Well, and you see all this, hey, we've expanded the number of people who are now employed has risen. Yeah, government jobs. See, here's the thing. We had Roger Stone on the program. He was involved with every presidential election except the George H.W. Bush-Clinton standoff in 1992. since 1968. He's been involved in every one of them. He wrote this book called The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. And he was talking about a lot of right-wing oil men that were behind, you know, propping up Lyndon Johnson. And he made the case that, you know, if Johnson hadn't pulled what he did, he was going to jail. So the thing is that he's right. There were lots of right-wing oil men and other men in other businesses that were pulling stuff back in those days. So, and it just makes the case for, as well, we've got to label ourselves with something. We've got to be a group. We've got to be cohesive here. So, okay, we'll be liberals and you guys be conservatives. But at the beginning of the program, I mentioned this picture I saw called The Company You Keep. And the very things that the so-called radical left back in the 60s, those very things they were fighting against then are the very same things that the ones on the right are fighting against now. So it's like it's this whole left-right thing is just stupid. Anytime a viable third-party candidate comes forward to make a run for the executive office, guess what happens? A tsunami of ridicule, and he or she gets run off immediately. So how can we dump the labels and just become a people? Or is it this conflict that keeps us going?
Well, there's a lot of things going on in that question. If you look at the history of American political parties, structurally, in the USA, 50% plus one vote and you win. And that means that third parties tend to be useless or harmful. You need to have parties that are centrist parties that are an aggregation of different factions and interest groups.
Yep.
And when you need a major reform, usually both parties are pretty committed to the way things are already. So what we have here in the USA now is the Democrat Party has kind of become the party, weirdly enough, of big business and big government at the same time. The Republican Party is almost a party without a role. The kind of big business-friendly part of the Republican Party is the old guys, and the rebels and the hellraisers and the reformers are the people from the Tea Party and people like that. And what happens with any new mass political movement is it starts out with enthusiastic amateurs who are rough around the edges. And it takes a while for the movement to mature and for people who are a little more effective and a little more appealing to centrist voters to come to the fore. So I think the process is working, and we're kind of on the way towards that, but it's difficult to watch it happen because you wish things could move along more quickly and that we could articulate these things a little better. But it's taking a while for people to wake up to what's really going on, and that is that you know, somebody made the joke once that you know, the labor movement has one party, but Wall Street has two, and is something to that. And so hopefully we'll see a shift within the Republican Party to a more reform-minded attitude, and hopefully something similar happen on the Democrat Party amongst people who see that what they'd really like to do in a benevolent kind of way isn't working from the methods that they've used since the mid-20th century.
I think that one of the things that can help is that at some point, whether it's somebody on the right or somebody on the left, you have some people who say, all right, the nation is broadly split 50-50, and if you look at all the presidential elections, all the congressional elections, mostly it's just a very small waving back and forth, mostly due to short-term tactical issues. And somebody's got to give up the idea that, you know, we're going to gain control of the government, and with our 50% plus one majority, we're going to cram our entire agenda down the throat of the rest of the other half of the nation. I mean, the Obama administration has been a perfect example of that. It's like they got in, and, you know, as corrupt and problematic as LBJ was, when he had his landslide in 1964 and he had veto, you know, filibuster-proof majority in the Senate and a huge majority in the House, he still went to the Republicans and negotiated the package that he wanted to push through. And he didn't have to, but he had a two-thirds preponderance temporarily. But he knew that Republicans would come back, and that to have anything last over time, he had to negotiate. And Obama had a much, much thinner mandate in 2008 when he came in, but he claimed to admire the New Deal and New Frontier and great society figures for their transformative actions, but he didn't actually imitate them. He didn't actually learn from what they did. He just said, all right, I've got my agenda, I'm going to cram it down your throat and tough. And this is what he did. And of course, his absolute control only lasted 2 years because the Tea Party rules as an inevitable reaction to that and have been resisting the rest of the agenda since then. And the other thing is we're at the end of the cycle of America 2.0. The solutions no longer work. And the collapse of Obamacare, the fact that they just physically couldn't make it work, they couldn't put together the software side of this in time to meet their own schedule, and they refused to look at reality and even get a postponement on it. I don't think you're going to see this kind of paradigm attempted again from the left. So maybe it is time, if the right gets back in, instead of saying, all right, we're going to take our social agenda, we're going to cram it down your throats, we offer them a decentralized solution in which they have the autonomy if they can convince people, you know, if you can convince people to pay your taxes on a local level and you know, adopt these social and democratic type solutions on a scale where they may possibly work, we'll let you do it as long as you don't put walls and watchtowers and guard dogs around to prevent people from leaving if they don't like it.
Right.
If you look at the countries where their social democratic models come closest to working, they're small places. Denmark is like 5 million people. Sweden is 9 million people. Even there, they've had to re-import many free market solutions. As a matter of fact, they've kind of gone more in the free market direction in a lot of ways than they have in the United States or the United Kingdom. I mean, Sweden has implemented school vouchers. It was a socialist government that introduced school vouchers, yet, you know, they're anathema to the American left. Then the America 3.0 solution, they're free to try this. They can talk people into it. So maybe okay. This is the basis of a solution.
Well, yes. I mean, there's... Maybe it's just an unwillingness to be, I mean, there must be some way to build in flexibility that will accommodate the vast majority of the populace. Because as
right.
It stands right now, we ain't getting no place fast. You know what I mean? And in the meantime, the debt clock is running, and we're all going to be beaten with that club when the bill comes due. And you know, I'm beginning to wonder if China's going to figure out that they've been sucked into a big Ponzi scheme. You know what I mean?
Oh, they only
think
that.
They have figured it out. I mean,
they're rattling their sabers over there going, you know, this doesn't look good. It looks to me like they dumped all their manufacturing on us, and now we're wandering around with face masks on and because we can't breathe the air from all of this production. And say, what's going on with those islands over there? Now they're, you know, we had a near collision with one of their Navy ships recently, and we're having the commercial airliners are having to call in when they go through the controlled airspace and so forth. It's it's just strange. In the end, gentlemen, don't you find it's just all about the Benjamins or the Yuan or whatever currency happens to be at hand?
There's a lot to that.
Well, there's a lot to that, but you know what? We don't want to be too cynical. You know, if the founders of the country weren't motivated solely by money, and the people who ended slavery weren't motivated solely by money, and the people who made the civil rights movement happen and ended Jim Crow weren't motivated solely by money. So there's a lot going on in the USA where we like our money. We like to make money and we like to hustle, but there's a lot more to us than that.
That gives me hope. It really does. Final segment coming up with our guest tonight. Their book, of course, is America 3.0, and they are James C. Bennett and Michael J. Lotus, and we shall return momentarily on Coast to Coast AM. I got to read you something here from America 3.0. Rather than, the much enlarged power of the government's law enforcement machinery has allowed it to pry more and more into the lives of ordinary Americans. These powers were developed primarily to wage the war on drugs and the war on terrorism. But trial balloons are being floated for using these capabilities for persons whose only distinguishing characteristic is distrust of government. This overt distrust and encroaching surveillance is becoming intolerable to an individualistic culture with a high regard for individual autonomy. Rather than making Americans feel safer, this growing power to invade the privacy of American citizens has led to what strategic analyst Mark Szafranski terms the creepy state. The creepy state already has the capacity and sometimes the will to arbitrarily do any of the following. Read your email, listen to your phone calls, track your movements on GPS, close off public spaces for private use, track your online activity, track your spending, track your political activity, read your medical records, read your financial records, scan your body, scan your house, scan your DNA, keep you under video surveillance in public, detain you at random in public places for security checks, determine your educational and career path, block your access to judicial relief, censor your speech, seize private property for private use, charge you with secret crimes for breaking secret regulations, share or leak information about you at will. The creepy state is a symptom of a system in distress, and we believe that is the author's terminal distress. So why don't we just talk about that? Let's talk about in our final segment the progressive reform that is effective but often creates unintended consequences. For example, the repeal or rather the implementation of prohibition of alcohol. Alcoholism destroyed personal dignity, ruined families, trapped people in poverty, and progressives wanted to end the scourge. But perversely, ending it led to a contempt for the law, rampant government corruption, and the appearance of organized crime on a scale never before seen in America. So, is this effort to make us all safe actually going to make us all much more unsafe? We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. All right. Well, I've floated out a little balloon of my own there, taking it from page 202 of America 3.0. What about this? What about this rubbish of making us all feel safe? Nobody's really safe completely. I mean, a soap chip on the bottom of the bathtub can get you if it comes right down to it. And we're going to regulate that? No, that's a little bit ridiculous. But where are we headed with all of this? And is the current surveillance state going to result in the same kind of conduct that was witnessed back during Prohibition?
John, you know what's funny is just as, we wrote the book and then talk about breaking states up into pieces happened afterwards. We wrote that passage you just read before the break, before the NSA scandal and before this business about the IRS hassling the Tea Party C3 applicants. So, you know, what really that shows is the public awareness of these abuses is becoming more commonplace and provoking a political response. So, obviously, we hope that's going to continue. And I don't think until we have a new administration and a new Justice Department that will hopefully probe into some of the things that have been going on that will make a ton of progress. And, you know, both political parties and the new president, whichever party he or she is from, you're going to have to commit themselves to pushing back on this, and the public's going to have to be alert to it. I think people are beginning to be mobilized against it. And on this question of can the government guarantee our safety, you're absolutely right. That's not possible. On the specific question of prohibition and the failure of prohibition of alcohol and this current war on drugs we have, I think we see the blowback from this. This has been absolutely catastrophic. And we talk to some degree about the predictions in the future that, you know, some of the issues with drug addiction and problems like that may be solved by medical advances. And I think we also believe that, you know, a government that's less heavy-handed about people's private conduct, if it's not hurting anybody else directly, is the direction we're going to have to go, because it's not possible to take care of everybody's needs and prevent them from medicating themselves or doing things for recreation all the time. And with the consequences, for example, Mexico has tens of thousands of people who've been killed in battles between the narcotics gangs, and that barely penetrates the newspapers in America. We can't continue to have those kind of problems. They're going to blow back on us and cause terrible problems for us in the future.
And the example of prohibition, there's a point that's worth bringing up here. And in a way, it's kind of a secularized version of Puritanism, where instead of, you know, Satan's presence in the world, they identify specific, often as objects, with evil humans behind them. In 1913, if somebody had gone into a saloon, had a drink, then went to a hardware store, bought a gun, and then shot someone, all the progressives would have said, it's obvious what's happened here. The saloon lobby has forced people to go into saloons and drink, and people get drunk, and then they go and commit crimes. So in order to prevent crime, we have to get the saloon lobby under control and shut down the saloons, and then people won't drink anymore because obviously the saloon lobby is forcing people to drink. Nowadays, if somebody goes into a bar, has a drink, goes, buys a gun, and shoots someone, of course, you actually have waiting periods, so it doesn't actually work like that. But all the progressives would say, it's obvious what's happened. The gun lobby has forced people to go buy guns. And if we can just outlaw guns, that will solve that problem. And this is the same mentality over and over and over again. They just find new demons to blame for this. And they keep believing that government power can, you know, with a magic edict, cause these things to go away. And we all know drink didn't go away, and everyone knew where to get a drink illegally. And if they were to totally ban guns, everyone would know where to get a gun illegally.
Absolutely.
And this is also true of drugs and prostitution and everything else. I mean, it makes sense to have sort of these Burkean curbs on things like prostitution so that hookers aren't still sitting in front of every public school. You can limit, you can steer human fallibility, but if you have a government edict, you just try to ban it outright, it just pops up somewhere else. It's like this giant game of whack-a-mole.
Well, you know, we have a few minutes left in the program, and would you mind offering some ways that people, you know, a few million of our closest friends are sitting in with us tonight, and many of them would like to know, all right, would you just tell us what to do to start the ball rolling in what you believe to be the right direction? And inevitably, the answer is going to be something like, get involved politically on the local, regional, or national level. Yes, there's that. But is there anything else? I mean, is there something we can do collectively to sort of shift the philosophy into a more willing mindset to at least examine opposing ideologies, ideas of how this thing should run? Or are we just doomed to an existence of conflict originating in politics?
John, I wish I could say that there's something you could just go to your computer and click on something and, you know, there's your group you can join to make the world a better place. And we're not there yet. what I do say, and, you know, self-servingly, I hope a lot of people will read our book and get some good ideas from it. And I'll also say that Jim and I are in the process of setting up a organization to develop some of these ideas. And the idea really is to try to educate people and provide other products in addition to this book down the road that are going to open people's eyes about the history of the country, the real nature of the current crisis we're in, and a vision of the future that will help motivate people politically and to become more activist and get involved. It's one thing to say, well, get involved. That's great, but you need a goal. You need a set of policies that you want to be promoting. You need an understanding of the current situation we're in, that the country isn't headed toward inevitable destruction. We're not doomed. There will be a future. Our grandchildren will live in the United States of America, and it's up to us what that United States of America is going to be like. So, you know, this book is, for us, the first step, I hope, in a variety of things we're going to do, and I hope that many, many other people will take inspiration from this and from many of the other good things that are going on now, and we can all start collectively to get out of the rut we're in and look towards replacing the things that aren't working, repairing the things that are worth saving, and start preparing ourselves for a better future.
Our first step was to publish the book to try to educate people. Hopefully, as a result of this, we can move on to the next step, which is to organize people, because we see, you know, phenomena like the Tea Party, or even, as Mike said, the early stages of the Occupy movement. People are looking for solutions. People want an agenda. People want a program. I think people had to become familiar with the kind of historical analysis we did, which really tells us what the problem is, where it's coming from, where the direction and solution are. Our next step will be to work on specific implementable policies and plans, and that we hope that all the freedom-loving movements from whatever source in this country get in touch with their values and are willing to talk to us and people like us and the other good people we work with, including people like you, and give some shape and some constructive goals to the freedom movement.
All right. Now, on your website, America 3.0, and you spell all of that out, folks, America3.0.com. Some links there that will, I mean, is that the beginning of a rabbit hole that's, that people can go to your site and follow and broaden
sure.
their consciousness?
John, what we've used that website for is to put up notices of appearances in the media and things that have been published about the book, as well as things that relate to the book. There's also a nice big picture of the front cover of the book. If you click on it, that'll take you to the Amazon page. We're hoping to upgrade that site at some point and add a lot more things that are related to our interests and other writers who've been consider important that it'll be easier to get in touch with. We're also hoping to have a PayPal button for the organization we're setting up that people can help us to take this thing to the next step. For now, America 3.0, spelled out all the words, America3.0.com is kind of our home base. And we'd love, as you said, to have that website even more spiffy in the future than it is right now.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let's see here. I don't want to just run out of gas, and there must be something else that we can use 5 minutes for, don't you think? Would you like to just deliver a message to America, whatever you feel like telling them, whether it's holiday-related or otherwise?
How about two and a half minutes for you, 2.5 minutes for me?
Okay. I just wanted to kind of wrap up by saying, even if things look bleak now, a lot of people make the mistake of just taking the present and projecting it out into the future and saying, it's going to be like this, more of this. The people in the government that are trying to double down on all the things that are not working have this same blind going down the track. We were talking about the Austro-Hungarian Empire. As the empire fell apart in 1918, the people in the Navy Department were still working on their plans for what the Austrian fleet of 1950 was going to look like when they projected it to be the largest fleet in the Mediterranean. There are people in Washington today who are planning even greater expansion than ever. But just as the Austro-Hungarian fleet fell apart, you know, a month later, I think we may see things like the IRS just start to fall apart, not because a rebellion took it down, but because even the government realized it was a counterproductive institution. So I think we are getting toward those days. Be of good cheer.
Yeah, and let me also say, and John, I appreciate your mentioning, we got Christmas coming up in a few days. And you know, one of the great geniuses of American life has been religious tolerance. Whether you're a Christian or not, or whether it's something that you take seriously or not, it's a pleasant time of year. People want to be nice to each other and want to be kind to each other. And you know, it's a time where people look at the families they love and care about. And it's the purpose of all this. The purpose of all of these things we're doing here is to help make the future of this country better and a place where people can live out their lives and be creative and take advantage of the exciting things that technology is providing, that we would have a country that's like the era of the founding, where people are autonomous and free and that families are self-supporting, but enormously more productive, that science and technology are going to give us a lot more, that we'll have the same degree of freedom that people had once upon a time, but also have the kind of material well-being that our creative genius as a people and the genius of the creative, the people who are entrepreneurs and inventors have given us. So we're looking forward to a great future for the United States, and we're going to get through these rough times. We're going to need to get organized to do it, and we're just beginning. But I think I'm very upbeat about it.
You know, you're the co-founder of two private space transportation companies. Are we going to get up there pretty soon en masse?
It's happening. It's happening right now.
How about this thing with China landing their rover up there and all?
That's fine. Good luck to them. I don't think that in the long run. As a matter of fact, they have already had internal memoranda in the Chinese launch program that is selling communication satellite launches to the world, saying with this new company SpaceX in California, if they make their targets, even China, with their labor rates, cannot match their prices.
Really?
Yes. Once private enterprise gets unleashed.
Well, that's kind of what levels the playing field, isn't it?
And the ingenuity rule.
Yes, indeed. You have been fabulous. And might I add, first-time guests on the program tonight. And let's stay in touch, because it would be good to have you back on the program. I recommend this book for anybody who would like to just get caught up on a bunch of stuff that you've either not learned at all or forgot that you learned it and can't figure out what's happening to you.
It appears that... greatly.
Sorry, say that again.
I have enjoyed it greatly.
Oh, it's been really excellent. This is an unusual discussion from an unusual perspective. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you, John.
All right, the website one more time is America 3.0. Spell all of the words out. Do not use numbers. And the book is America 3.0, and that was quite fun. Well, as we wrap up the anniversary edition of the end of the Mayan calendar, 1 year later, we're still here. You know, everybody's talked about one world and unification of this and all people living together in peace. Well, maybe we'll have to settle for all people living. That would be good. But at the end of America 3.0 discusses the end of history, the failure of universalism in the post-Cold War era. It's just one of those dreams that we just keep chasing. So, I think it would be good. You know, I totally missed it on the on December 8th that John Lennon had been assassinated that day, that night. And so we'll have a little piece with John and Yoko coming up here very, very soon to carry us into the Christmas week. There are 12 days of Christmas running from the 25th through the 5th of January. And that's kind of a good thing, because it'll still be one of the 12 days of Christmas, in fact, the last of the 12 days of Christmas, when I talk to you again. Won't be around for a little while. The plan is to be absent from the left seat next Saturday night on the 28th. Don't know who's going to be here, but somebody will carry you through the late night hours. Christmas is for everybody. Christian and otherwise. It's just a day where we can be decent to each other. Remember, treat strangers like family, and family like strangers, and you'll be executing perfect domestic manners. Merry Christmas, everybody. Happy holidays, and a very, very happy new year. Talk to you Saturday night after next, with any luck. If I drop off the scope completely, come see me at caravantomidnight.com. You'll probably find me. Good night and be well.